This is DW News live from Berlin. Polls close in a snap election aimed at healing national divisions in Armenia. Voters give their verdict on a disastrous defeat in war and a prime minister who signed away large chunks of bitterly contested territory. Also coming up, officials in Moscow step up anti-COVID measures after vaccine skepticism and the Delta variant see new infections triple this month. And Italy's fans go wild in Rome as their team qualifies for the Euro 2020 knockout stages with a win over Wales. I'm William Gloucroft. Welcome to the program. Votes are being counted in Armenia in parliamentary elections that were moved up due to a disastrous war with Azerbaijan last year. Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan taking an early lead. The ceasefire saw Armenia lose large swaths of territory in the long-disputed Nagorno-Karabakh region. The election result could impact the future of the agreement with Azerbaijan, which was brokered by Russia. More than 20 parties are vying for the vote, but Pashinyan is hoping to renew his mandate despite a drop in popularity.
Nikol Pashinyan on his way to the voting booth. Armenia's prime minister called the election to stabilize his government. It's a gamble that could well backfire. Armenia is still smarting from its defeat to Azerbaijan in the war over the disputed enclave of Nagorno-Karabakh. A peace treaty brokered by Russia in November sealed the loss of vast swaths of territory after thousands of Armenian soldiers had died in the fighting. The lost war kicked off a wave of protests, with demonstrators even storming the parliament in Yerevan. Critics also hold Pashinyan responsible for the country's flagging economy.
The current government has failed. They have failed on the economy, and they failed to protect us.
The last 3 years have been awful. Our economy, our politics, it's all gone totally wrong.
I want to be able to get up in the mornings and go out for my exercise without finding a demonstration outside on the streets.
Former President Robert Kocharyan is the candidate most likely to unseat Pashinyan. He has strong ties to Russia and once led Nagorno-Karabakh's Armenian government. But those credentials will not help him recover lost ground. Armenians are unlikely to see a reversal of the country's fortunes, regardless of who wins the election.
DW correspondent Nick Connolly is in Yerevan. He sent us this assessment of the elections.
Armenia's 2 million people had 26 parties to choose from on their ballots, but only two with any realistic chance of forming a government. One belonged to the incumbent Nikol Pashinyan, the other to former President Robert Kocharyan. Among the people we spoke to at the polling stations, there was little enthusiasm for either. One man told me that for him, it was simply a question of choosing the lesser of two evils. This election was always going to be defined by Armenia's defeat to Azerbaijan in last year's war. And many voters here seem determined to punish the incumbent Nikol Pashinyan for signing a ceasefire they say gave away too much too early. A decision that they would argue overshadows all of Pashinyan's earlier reforming achievements. His main rival, Robert Kocharyan, couldn't be accused of being a reformer by any stretch of the imagination. He's a prominent member of this country's political elite that was chased from power in street protests just a few years ago. He's also widely seen as the Kremlin's man in Armenia, something that many voters here in Armenia are now seemingly willing to look past in the hope that by sticking ever closer to Vladimir Putin's Russia, they can expect more support from Moscow next time tensions with Azerbaijan flare up. Ahead of this election, polling suggested that the two top-rated parties were just one percentage point apart. If that turns out to have been anywhere near true, Armenians could now be facing an uncomfortable few days as the two front-runners bring their supporters out into the streets of Yerevan and hold mass rallies as every last vote is counted.
Let's get some more news from around the world now. Iran and six world powers have wrapped up nuclear talks in Vienna. The EU's envoy, Enrique Mora, said he expected the international nuclear watchdog, the IAEA, and Tehran to reach a deal on extending a monitoring agreement of Iran's nuclear activities. The current accord ends Thursday. Israel's new prime minister, Naftali Bennett, has reacted angrily to Raisi's election victory. Bennett is urging Western nations to wake up before reviving a nuclear deal with Iran. He's condemned Iran's leaders as, quote, mass murderers. The United States has sent 2.5 million COVID-19 vaccine doses to the island of Taiwan in a move likely to anger Beijing, which considers Taiwan part of China. Taiwan's government has accused China of hampering its efforts to secure enough vaccine supply. China was furious earlier this month when U.S. senators visiting Taiwan announced the vaccine donation. Spain's tourism industry relies heavily on British vacationers. Millions of them pack the country's beaches every summer, which the pandemic put an end to. Although Spain is letting in tourists without quarantine, the UK is telling people coming back they have to self-isolate. And that's putting some British beachgoers off at Spain's expense.
A beach that usually sees tens of thousands of people, now with plenty of space. The high tourism season may have started, but Benidorm is still half asleep. The popular holiday destination is missing its main summer visitors, the British. And that's why almost half of all hotels remain closed here. Among them, the Rio Park. In normal times, its 400 rooms would be booked by now.
You feel powerless. We've already had to endure this situation for a long time. In the beginning, we were told it would be 1, 2, or maybe 3 months. But months have passed, and it's not getting better. That can be demotivating.
Spain hasn't made it on the United Kingdom's green list, meaning British tourists need to quarantine for 10 days when they get home. It's a disaster, not just for Benidorm's hotels. Taxi drivers, shops and bars are also feeling the impact. And the few British that have made it here, like Dave from Liverpool, cannot understand the policy.
They're telling us that 70% of the population in Britain's vaccinated, so why aren't we allowed to come to Spain and enjoy our 6 weeks holidays, summer holidays? So just a bit odd, but never mind, we're here to enjoy the sun.
Locals here say the problem is that the UK looks at the national COVID-19 incidence rate, not at the regional. Benidorm's infection rate is below 25, but even the local hoteliers group understands the British caution.
They don't want to open up another country and then reverse, like they did with Portugal. That would be a loss for all the tour operators and complicated for clients too, as they'd have to go home earlier and pay for another flight. The British don't want to slip up again.
Despite the struggle to fill the city's skyscrapers, there is still hope. Mayor remains optimistic that British tourists will finally arrive in the coming weeks.
This has been going well for 60 years. Why should we change anything? When you're happily married, you don't file for divorce, do you?
Miguel Ángel Correa, too, is waiting for the Brits. In July, his hotel will reopen. There are already reservations, but mostly from Spain. An important market, too. Preparations for the guests are underway. The reopening has been a long time coming.
This hotel has 130 employees, and at the moment only 5 of them are working in maintenance and management. We miss our employees. We're really keen to get started again.
With its serene pools and spacious beaches, Benidorm is waiting, hoping for the annual invasion of British holidaymakers. Better late than never.
While most of Europe has seen a sharp decline in COVID-19 cases this month, in Moscow, the number of infections has tripled, hitting new record highs, and this despite the availability of vaccines. The soaring caseload has caused alarm among officials who have stepped up measures to contain the rapid spread of the virus.
The celebrations at Moscow's soccer fan zone are over for the time being. The Russian capital has seen record numbers of coronavirus infections for 2 consecutive days. Hospitals are preparing several thousand extra beds for COVID-19 patients. The city's mayor, Sergei Sobyanin, says the Delta variant is responsible for the latest outbreak. The escalation was unexpected because 60% of Muscovites have already been infected with COVID-19 or have been vaccinated. So there should be a lot of herd immunity. But the Delta variant is not the only problem. The mayor says too many Russians are skeptical. Vaccinations are easy to get, but just 10% have got the shot so far. In response, Moscow has imposed a mandatory vaccination requirement for some sectors. Other regions want to follow the capital's lead, but residents remain unconvinced. If it becomes stricter and stricter, more people will have a negative attitude. I don't trust the vaccine. I haven't found precise information. They just say we should be vaccinated against COVID, that's all. The city's hospitals now want to restrict routine procedures to vaccinated patients, with exceptions only in emergencies. Starting Monday, Moscow will be testing so-called COVID-free bars and restaurants. Only vaccinated people or those who've recovered from the virus will be granted access.
Turning to soccer now and Euro 2020, where Italy have won Group A after beating Wales 1-0 in Rome, though both sides qualified for the last 16. Matteo Pessina scored the winner for the Italians with a header in the first half. Wales had Ethan Ampadu sent off, but they still qualify after finishing second in the group. Meanwhile, Switzerland could still qualify as one of the best third-place teams after they beat Turkey 3-1 in Baku. Turkey exit the tournament after finishing bottom. Let's take a look at that final Group A table. You can see there, Italy topped the group with 3 wins from 3 and 0 goals conceded. Wales and Switzerland both have 4 points, but Wales qualify with a superior goal difference. And you can see right there, Turkey didn't manage a single win in a dismal campaign. And let's get more on all of that. Joining me now, Oliver Moody from DW Sports. Italy on top. Are they looking favored?
Well, it was certainly another great performance from them today. They actually rested some of their key players for this game because they knew they were through anyway. And they were still way too good for this Wales team. Wales just didn't have any response. And if anything, it was a surprise that Italy only managed to score the 1 goal and didn't win by a bigger margin. So Italy now, with 3 wins from their 3 group stage games, there are only 2 other teams at the tournament that could match that with their remaining games. Italy, of course, also haven't conceded a goal yet at the tournament, and there are only 2 other teams who can say that at the whole tournament. So clearly they're looking very, very good. The only note of caution I would say is that sometimes you get this at major tournaments where a team flies out of the blocks and then at some point just hits a wall. So that, other than that, you have to say Italy are looking like favourites right now.
Hopefully they won't fly too close to the sun. What about Switzerland? 3rd place, but they can still make it through.
That's right. We had this really tense finish today where in the latter stages of the 2 games, a goal in each game would have swapped the order there. So Switzerland would then have gone through automatically and Wales would have been the team sort of sweating. But as it is at Euro 2020, 4 of the 6 third-place teams in the groups do make it through to the next round. And Switzerland have 4 points. That's a good total for a team in third place. I think they will still go through. But they now have to sit and sweat through the remaining action in the group stage, whereas Wales can take it easy for a couple of days.
And there is a lot of action left to go. Monday, paint a picture for us.
That's right. We've got 2 of the other really impressive teams at this tournament so far playing. So Belgium are in action, and so are the Netherlands. Those are the 2 other teams that I was talking about earlier as teams that have got a 100% record so far. So it's going to be good to see both of those teams again and see if they can match up to Italy. At the same time, we've got a situation in both groups B and C where the teams in 2nd and 3rd are on equal points. That's Russia and Finland and Austria and Ukraine. So all 4 of those teams are going to give us a lot of drama, I would hope and expect.
All right, a lot of drama, a lot of math. Sorting it out for us, Oliver Moody, DW Sports. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
In Formula One, Red Bull's Max Verstappen has won the French Grand Prix after taking the lead late in the race from Mercedes' Lewis Hamilton. The win extends Verstappen's lead in the championship standings to more than 10 points over Hamilton. And Verstappen's Red Bull teammate, Sergio Perez, completed the podium, finishing 3rd. Up next, we've got reporter Orlando 5 years after the massacre. And of course, we'll have more news for you at the top of the hour. And until then, you can go to our website, dw.com, and follow us on Twitter and Instagram for all the latest. That's, you know it, at DW News. I'm William Gluecroft. Thanks very much for watching.